For me, being a 100k earner in this country puts you in the 1% of earners. There is no faster way to do that than a sales career.
I'm a youngster. I want to earn 100k. What is my next step after listening to this episode?
Great. So the first thing I would do is...
Hey guys, you're about to tune in to an incredible conversation I just had with James Ski, who's the founder of Sales Confidence. We talk about a whole host of things, from him being diagnosed with bipolar disorder at 20, to how he navigated this to become a super successful entrepreneur. We talk about some of the setbacks he's had in business, some of the wins he's had in business, and we talk about how anybody, absolutely anybody, can make 100k and the steps you need to take to make that money. So guys, tune in, and if you're liking the podcast and you're liking what we do here, please make sure to like, subscribe, share. It does absolute wonders for the channel. Now back to the show. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the founder, James. James, how you doing?
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm really excited to be on the show today. You know, I've listened to a number of the episodes, and I like that, you know, this is an opportunity for people to discover what it really means to be a founder behind the scenes, or like understand someone's career. And makes it accessible.
Yeah.
That's what I think you're doing. You're making it accessible to understand, you know, what people really do, which is not always obvious from a job title or a LinkedIn profile.
100%. And yeah, thanks for that, because you probably said it better than I say it myself. But we like to start by taking it way back. What did you want to be growing up?
Yeah, so I actually have spent the majority of my career as a sales professional, and most recently over the last 6 years as a founder. And this is actually what I wanted to do as a kid.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't fall into sales, as I often say. Like, I genuinely picked sales as a career. And there were a number of reasons. The first was when I was about 15, I spent time on holiday with, there was a kind of a massive group of families on holiday. We were in Cyprus. And there was a girl that I fancied in this group.
Yeah.
And her dad was a successful local businessman from where I grew up in Windsor. And I remember while he was sunbathing, he had a bunch of business books, self-help books, get rich books, wealthy books. And in these books, which was super helpful, he had highlighted certain pages.
Yeah.
And one of those books was... what was it called? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is all about how you should become a business owner and then an investor. And it talked about that the majority of business owners or successful entrepreneurs, CEOs, were salespeople. Mm-hmm. And I had already had, you know, people even at that age suggest that that could be a potential career. And I just knew very early on that business is what I wanted to pursue. Sales is what's something that I could develop as a skill. So for me, from that early age, I was pursuing and choosing subjects or university courses based on that inspiration.
Okay, and I feel like, and I've heard you say it before, sales isn't really something that people say, go to uni and learn how to become a salesman. So yeah, for the listener, the courses that you kind of picked and the university degree that you did, what was it that helped to push you in that direction?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, look, fundamentally, sales is about understanding people, and it's about being a fantastic communicator and being able to articulate your proposition, your service, your product, or yourself. You do not need a university to go and do that.
Okay.
100%. And I think, you know, there is still this distortion that a university degree is required to be successful in business. It's not. Now, if you are pursuing a typical profession, like, you know, medicine or consulting or property, you tend to need a relevant qualification, and you might need some accreditations to go and do that. And there isn't a specific course for sales, which is bizarre because it's one of the most important aspects of any business.
100%.
No sales, no business. Yeah. And no sales, you can't employ other people to do their jobs, right? Yeah. It just doesn't happen. I purposely chose subjects that I thought would prepare me for business. Okay. So, for example, at A-levels, I did maths, economics, and chemistry was the other one. Yeah. Economics and maths I thought would be helpful.
Hey, chemistry of people. Don't do yourself a disservice. Yeah.
And I believe in that.
Yeah.
And then from there at university, I did a kind of a typical business course. I actually did it on entrepreneurship studies.
Okay.
And that was at Oxford Brookes University. If I'm honest, you know, what did I learn to prepare me to become a business owner from that course? Little to nothing. I didn't think it was super helpful. I learned more on the campus. I had small kind of projects and business ideas when I was on campus. Mm-hmm. And honestly, today, I think if you are someone that's aspiring to be in business, let's say you're listening to this and you're a young person, meaning you're at high school or uni, there's no excuse for you not to build a website, build a Shopify store, create a YouTube channel, start a podcast. Like, there are so many things now because of technology that are super accessible that you can instantly start making money from and learn. Mm-hmm. You learn by doing.
Yep.
And without a doubt, that is the most important trait, I believe, of someone trying to pursue business. I don't think, you know, being super book smart and also pursuing courses and degrees is needed. Now, you know, there's plenty of super successful professionals and business people that have high quality degrees, much more high quality than I've got. But that being said, when the reality hits in the real world, it's other skills that you need to develop, and being street smart while being bright, that's a stronger combination.
First of all, yeah, completely agree. My question to you, you touched upon the fact that you learned a lot on the campus, you started some businesses. Would you say that those experiences, starting those businesses on the campus, were worth the admission? Or do you think that if you didn't go to university, you still would have had those experiences in another way?
That's a great question. That is a great question. You know, what university did for me is it allowed me to, you know, escape the nest. I moved from my family home. So you kind of have to take responsibility. 100%. I struggled. You know, I didn't know how to do my own washing. I could barely feed myself. I didn't know how to budget.
Yeah.
So if I'm honest, it was a bit of a disaster. And then I attempted to set up businesses. Like, I ran club nights. I got involved in like a multi-level marketing business. I had some other ideas. And, you know, throughout all that craziness, I guess the campus gave me that opportunity to kind of, you know, experiment and pitch. Now, what I found unusual, considering I went to a business school and there was entrepreneurial courses, people weren't interested in it. Mm. And that's generally because as students, you're still in the mindset of having fun. You know, even though you're there to study, people aren't thinking that far ahead. I think that has to change. You know, I think you should be testing ideas, experimenting, because the campus is a bit of a protected bubble to do that.
100%.
So from that perspective, yeah. But I also wonder, you know, if I'd gone into, I think, again, you can learn from business owners. If I went straight into work at 18 or 19, I would have chosen to work for a successful entrepreneur, founder, business owner. I like the early stage startup, small businesses, where you get exposed to different aspects of the business, everything from product, customer success, sales, etc., marketing. And then you start to lean into what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then you can still do a side hustle. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think it would be nice to earn some money straight out of uni, not get into the debt that, you know, university puts you in.
100%.
And again, the technology now, like my daughter, for example, she's 9. She's got her own Shopify store. She makes bracelets.
Oh my goodness.
Right. And she sells a few of them on her Shopify store. And now she starts making little videos to demonstrate them. And she's got a TikTok channel. She's got a YouTube channel. You know, it's just her family subscribing. But the idea is that she's learning these skills because it's super accessible.
Mm.
And I think people create this artificial barrier in their minds that it's impossible to run a business, or it's impossible, or I can never do this, I can never do this,
yeah.
or that. But it's actually completely accessible these days.
Yeah, and you know, talking about that accessibility, obviously coming out of university, you held some jobs. Can you talk me through kind of the different roles you held, and then what was the tipping point for you saying, hey, I'm going to go out on my own and become this entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I you know, while at university, I was coming up with creative projects, not particularly successful at all, but you know, just good fun and good lessons.
Yeah.
Then I had the intention of, you know, just starting companies. That was all I had the intention to do.
Mm.
But the reality of having to pay rent, also, I my ex-partner, we found out that we were having our first child when I was only 23.
Oh, wow.
So, like, that was a shock to the system, and that meant that I needed a stable income to look after our small family at the time. And therefore, I kind of had to be in employment. And I chose each role in my early career to prepare me to be an entrepreneur. So the first role, and therefore sales. So I went for an assessment day.
Okay.
So I turned up to an assessment day, similar to a partner I've got now called Venatrix. And basically what they do is they you know, they run you through some role plays, and then they have a bunch of companies in the room, and those companies select you based on your potential and your talent.
Yeah.
And I got my first role working for a telecoms company, and that telecoms company, in essence, put me on the phones from day one. You know, I remember my very first cold call. I was so nervous and so anxious that I picked up the phone. I dialed the number, picked up the phone, was shaking. And then when someone answered at the end, I just hung up.
yeah. We've all been there.
So I was just so nervous.
Yeah.
But that gave me a good kind of grounding in identifying key stakeholders in a business or in a market, and then pursuing those individuals via the phone, via meetings, etc. From there, I then moved into to London and worked in recruitment.
Okay.
Fundamentally, recruitment is a massive industry in this country, as it is in the world. It's graft. Mm. It is real graft. And I worked for a very successful entrepreneur. He used to get into the office at like 7, work till at 9 o'clock. You had like 200 recruiters in this building that would get in the office at 7, stay till 9, at least 3 nights of the week. Wow. Thursday was like the night out.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of graft people were doing was incredible. And, you know, for a time, I thrived in that environment and really enjoyed learning from the people that I was interacting with. And recruitment as a skill and hiring is fundamental to the success of any business.
Yeah.
So learning how to sift through CVs, interview people, understand what their needs were is really, really important. However, the hours were crazy and I had a newborn and it just didn't fit with my
lifestyle. Can I ask a question on that? Do you feel like, you just mentioned that recruitment is graft. Do you feel like in today's society, people are missing that graft? Like, because 7 to 9, I don't hear that too much these days.
Not
Do you
at
think
all.
It was a time gone
yeah,
by?
Yeah, I mean, so look, I entered the workforce in like 2008, which remember was around the
economic downturn.
Exactly. Yeah. So people were like holding on to their jobs, and we were servicing the banking industry at the time, which was really struggling. There was like financial crisis and meltdown.
Mm.
Now, without a doubt, it was just like the expectation and the norm. I've hired a lot of teams now in the world that I work in now, the software industry. We talk about the sales development rep, the SDR role, or the BDR. This is the first role on the run of the ladder. And you're right. You know, I just had a team recently where it gets to 5 minutes to 6, and it's like they're at school packing up their bag and their pencil case and legging it out the door. You know, you go into a WeWork these days, and this is supposed to be an environment full of entrepreneurs. People are locking up at 5. It winds me up. Now, I'm, and we can probably go into it a little bit. I come from a place where I used to be a rowing athlete. You know, I used to train 6 days a week. I put my all obsessively into being the best that I could be.
Mm.
Came into work, wanted to replicate that same work ethic. Now, I'm also diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which is a mood disorder, which brought on from stress and overworking.
Mm.
So I also acknowledge that it isn't healthy to do that all the time. But sometimes you just got to put in the work.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to get ahead, you know, there's 52 weekends in the year. If you want to get ahead, go study on the weekend. Go put some extra work in. But honestly, you say that on LinkedIn. I've literally been called out for it.
Yeah.
Because I've said, and this happened a few months ago, I literally said on LinkedIn, if you want to get ahead, do some work on the weekend. And people were going crazy.
Yeah.
They were like, no, as a CEO, James, you should not be recommending people use their weekends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what world are we in? And we're in a bubble. I tell you that. For, yeah. And this is what wound me up about it. Because, you know, my parents worked in the medical profession. My dad was a doctor. Mum was a nurse. They were on call. They would work weekends. They would work late. You know, I wouldn't see them often. There's so many people in society that are grafting 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this bubble of tech that we work in, it's all like, you know, well, as I only want to go in the office once a week these days, you know, mm-hmm. or not at all. Is the office going to provide food if I come in? Because if I'm going to make the effort, I'm going to pay for my lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, is there a table tennis table because I need a break? Can I bring my dog in? That winds me up. Nothing against dog owners.
Whoa, yeah, James, be very careful. Don't get us cancelled.
But like, everyone's like, oh, you know, will you let me bring my dog in?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is a workplace.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's nice sometimes to see a dog.
To the dogs that come into my office, James's thoughts are his own. Okay, to anyone listening.
I love dogs, by the way.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's changed a lot. And I have seen it with young people. And do you know what? I think if you want to give yourself an edge, it's not that hard to do a little bit more to get ahead these days.
Yeah.
And so take advantage of it.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, going back to what you were saying there, so you mentioned the fact that you'd been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Like, when did that happen? Yeah, at what age?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed when I was 20.
So at university?
I was at uni. And the story goes, essentially, I was launching a new club night in Oxford, and I had all these people signed up on my guest list. It was the first night of Freshers Week, and I was like promoting this brand new club, which wasn't really on the main strip, but everyone was on my guest list. I was super excited about it. Anyway, it got to 9 o'clock. There was no one queuing. There was no one there. So I went down the main strip and just wanted to see where everyone might be. And they were all queuing on all the clubs that have been there for years.
Yeah.
So in this moment of madness, I basically was like, okay, I need to go and grab their attention. So I went into the car park, got my Vauxhall Corsa, turned down the windows, put on my ghetto blaster, went down the main strip in Oxford and did a 360 degree turn in my car, got on top of the car and then took my clothes off.
Okay.
So here I am on top of my car. Some bugger stole my keys. I'm getting their attention. People are taking photos, you know, laughing, screaming. Few people left the queue and maybe did go to my club. But anyway, I felt like I was up there for like 10 minutes, but it must have been seconds or a
minute. Yeah, yeah.
The police arrived. They took me by the side and said, listen, what you doing? You've just caused a major incident. You know, you must be high. Like, what have you taken? And it wasn't drugs, well, no alcohol. And anyway, 2 days later, I was in hospital. Mm-hmm. And what led to that was I had kind of a breakdown. I saw a doctor. I went to see the doctor in A&E with my friend's mum. And the doctor said to me, you know, you're unwell. And I was like, well, I'm fine. You know, I don't feel quite right, but I'm well, you know, I'm physically fine. And she's like, no, you're mentally unwell.
Wow.
And she's like, you need to go to hospital. And I was like, I am in a hospital. She's yeah. like, no, you need to go to a mental health hospital.
Just on that, like, how does somebody, they say you're mentally unwell, is there like a psych evaluation?
Yeah, there is a psych evaluation. They're asking you certain questions. You know, they're asking you what's been happening into the lead up behaviors. Okay. Oh, I stood up on top of a car.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound normal. There was some like emotional turmoil going around in my mind. And so she asked this question. I remember it like it was yesterday. And she said, look, you can either go voluntary or we're gonna put you there.
Wow.
I was like, okay, well, I better go and do what you're saying. And then so we arrived in this mental health hospital in Heatherwood in Ascot, which is no longer there. And that was the start of suddenly being normal and then becoming a mentally ill patient and experiencing a mental health hospital. And, it changed my life because, you know, one minute I was a high performing rowing athlete, I was a student, I was, you know, had some business projects. The next minute I'm in a mental health hospital with supposedly ill people. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that I, you know, like to point out. To me, no one was ill in there. Like, I just thought this is just a group of people. I was hanging out with them. I'm a networker, so I like making friends with people. And even that experience was hugely humbling because, you know, while I was there, I tried to help people. And I remember one day a nurse came up to me. They were all getting upset because I was winding people up, apparently. She said, listen, you can't do what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do you mean? She said, I'm just trying to befriend these people. And I'd brought all my self-help books in from my house. And I was giving them out to people based on then, you know, if I thought they were overweight, I was like, here's a get fit book. And I was like, if they were depressed, I was like, here's a positive thinking book.
Yeah.
And they said, look, you're intimidating the patients. And I was like, no, I'm just trying to help them. She said, well, you need to help yourself.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm here for a reason.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it started to dawn on me. And then, to be honest, then it became very scary because I started to just become very self-conscious and aware that clearly I know I'm well. And, you know, then after 10 days of being in there, they gave me my diagnosis of bipolar. And I was like, wow, didn't know what that was, didn't know what it meant, hadn't really heard of it before.
So for the listener, how would you define bipolar
disorder? So bipolar disorder, also known as manic depression, is a mood disorder where you experience hyper highs and low lows. And so most people that go through depression, that's what it is. It's, you know, it's low, it's dark, it's lonely. Struggle to seek out positivity, you don't experience the light side of life, and you're demotivated and you're not functioning at your best self. Unfortunately, a lot of people are in that state or go through that state and leave that state. When you're bipolar, you also experience the high. Now, I sometimes call it the upside because it does give me, you know, a lot of positivity, optimism. I'm generally an outgoing, gregarious, enthusiastic person. But when I'm up even further, it's too much. It's I have accelerated thoughts where I can't calm down. I can't read. I can't type on an email out because my thoughts are going so fast.
Mm.
And so that's kind of what they call hypermanic or manic. And so for me, I've basically cycled over the last now, 15 years from these high highs and these low lows. And that initial experience was related to a high.
Mm.
And then when I came out of hospital, I basically had to take a year out of uni. Mm. And I was just depressed. I've got friends that are more what we call depressive bipolars. And they often joke, they're like, you know, you're lucky you get the highs.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's considered as, I don't consider it, It is an illness, right? But I'm fine 99% of the time.
Yeah.
I have moods like anyone. You know, I have down days, I have up days, but there is a percent where it becomes so severe that I can't function.
Yeah.
And that's where the illness part really kicks in.
And are you able, you know, you mentioned that you've been dealing with it for 15 years. Can you now predict when that's going to happen and it doesn't happen as
well? Yeah. So I'm much more aware. You know, there are many, and I think this is also, you know, recognition to people. I fought for a very long time in my 20s that this wasn't a thing. I didn't have it because you can't see it. I'd really push back on the doctors. I'd stop taking medication. I'd come off it. And same things would happen. I'd get ill. And I've been in 7 different hospitals in my life. I've spent over 200 nights in a mental hospital. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of mental health hospitals, the system.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've still had, you know, a pretty good life. I've had a great career in software. I've run a business. I've got a family of 3 children. And I know that these days, fortunately, touch wood, it's been 4 years since I've been in hospital, and I'm much more aware of mood changes, taking on too much stress, behavioral changes. And I guess what it's given me, which is I feel my advantage, is that I'm hyper self-aware, because I've had to be.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I'm checking in on myself. We should all do that, but I have to do it because if something behaviorally is changing, which could impact my productivity, could impact my performance in my work life, could impact my family, it's just not, it's not good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having that deep understanding of self is very, very important.
I love that. And, you know, just for the listener, you mentioned the fact you spent over 200 days in facilities. I think the first, what comes to my mind, what is it about the facility that helps to kind of bring you back to self?
That's the right question, because it does. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions about what a mental health institution, facility or hospital is. Now, it is a hospital, firstly. They are there to care for you. The people in there are there to help you. And in my life, and I'm so grateful for this, I've met the most amazing people in mental health hospitals. Firstly, the nursing and doctor's staff generally are excellent. Mm-hmm. And I've been in NHS hospitals and I've been in private hospitals, but genuinely they care about helping the patient,
yeah.
You know? And so you feel this overwhelming care from people like, James, what's wrong? How can we help you? How are you gonna get through today? How are you gonna get through this afternoon? You know, can we get you a cup of tea? Are you ready for lunch? Honestly, it's like, it's the most caring environment that I've ever experienced. Then you add in the fact that these hospitals are safe, you know. You are behind a lock and key, so you can't just freely come and go. You need permission. And they're there to look after you. You're in a hospital for two main reasons they describe it. One, if you're a potential harm to yourself, or two, you're a potential harm to others. Now, I've never been a harm to others, but I have been a harm to myself, either from depressive thoughts or because I'm erratic in my behavior.
Yeah.
And so in the hospital, you know, you have an ensuite private room, you get breakfast, lunch and dinner, you get looked after by the nurses, they're monitoring you. And then, you know, you have interaction with patients. Now, you know, the people in a mental health hospital are in a crisis. If you end up there, it's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at me, and when people listen to my story, it's almost hard to believe. They're like, well, hold on, you're a professional, you've got a great career. How is it possible for someone like you? But this is the thing. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're extremely wealthy. It doesn't matter if you're extremely poor. It doesn't matter who you are, everything in between. You know, you can go through one of these crises.
Yeah.
But generally, it's not to say for every hospital unit, because I've been in some pretty miserable ones, but generally these places are there and set up to help you calm yourself. And for me, it's like, it's a bit like a sanctuary. And after a period of a few weeks, I just calm. And I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm okay now.
Yeah.
And it's time to leave.
And so what's the longest stint
you've spent? The longest stint I've done is probably about 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
In one go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And then how did, like you mentioned, you're under lock and key. So yes, you calm, but like, how do they decide, okay, because I'm sure there are days where you're like, I'm fine to go. And they're like, no. Today is not that day.
So, I mean, it's funny in hindsight, but you're right. So they assess you before you can do anything, because, you know, they don't want you running off. They don't want you causing trouble. You might be what they call escorted leave, so you go out with a nurse and you just have to stay around them where you can walk in the town or wherever you're nearby. Mm-hmm. So that happens when you've got permission. Now, if you're under section, then you have to stay within the unit for a certain period of time, and that's pretty horrible. And I've been in situations where you go to a tribunal. Basically, there's a judge and there's experts, there's a panel. And I've tried it to use my sales skills to persuade them that I'm actually fine.
Yeah.
And I've had, like, you know, close friends or witnesses to come in and say, yeah, he's fine. This is how he gets, like, you know, and the doctor's like going through their notes and they're like, wow, why did he do this? And, you know, why has he brought a guitar into the hospital? Or why has he got DJ? I've done all this. Like, why is he playing his music loud at night? I don't know, because I'm trying to entertain myself. Or why is he drawing on the wall?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what I'm going to admit it now. But for example, one hospital stay, I don't know why, but I drew a picture on the wall. And because they let me get away with it, I ended up drawing on the whole four walls of this hospital bedroom. And there is like a level of creativity. You meet some super creative people in there. You know, you meet some very unfortunate people. devastating stories, stories of hardship that fortunately I've not been in my life. You know, I do sometimes feel when I've been in there somewhat guilty that I've had a great upbringing, I'm well educated, you know, I've had a pretty successful career, and there are people in there that have experienced abuse. You know, they've been made homeless, they've gone through the system, the foster system, and you hear their stories and you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I they're stuck. There are some people that would never leave the system, and you know, they're like hidden away, they're not seen in society, they're just lost. Yeah. And like when you're around that, it is super humbling to realize how kind of fragile the human mind is and how fragile humans are. But fortunately, you know, there are people looking out for them. I think the other challenge or misconception is often the media doesn't help, because you know, you obviously get the you know, the scaremongering and the attacks with people that are criminal,
yeah,
and mentally ill.
Yeah,
that's different, you know, of course it is. And that's extremely unfortunate, and I think this is where the stigma of mental illness comes from and why people don't want to talk about it or share about it, is because if you suddenly say you're bipolar or you're schizophrenic or you know, whatever, then it's assumed that you're a bad egg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately for me, I'm over it. Like, if you judge me and you don't want to hang out with me and you're not interested, then so be it. I'll move on.
I have a question on that. So you mentioned that in your 20s you were in denial. What was the turning point where you came to accept it?
Yeah.
And yeah, you moved on.
So there was a number of triggers. You know, for many years I could not find an example of like a business bipolar person anywhere. And I'd search all the time. It's even now, it's hard to find. There are thousands of successful professionals and business people that have this diagnosis of bipolar but will never talk about it because they feel it's a risk to their career, to their family, to their friends. And so, you know, it is quite rare to get this type of insight that I'm sharing. But honestly, it was a couple of triggers. One, I spent a number of years working for LinkedIn. LinkedIn, one of the best tech companies in the world. And at that company, they had a fantastic DIBS program, diversity, inclusion and belonging. And basically everything they promoted was whoever you are, whatever you look like, whatever you've got, it's fine. Mm. And I remember I got this opportunity to share my story and, you know, people just embraced it. And I was like, wow, okay, this is fine. And the other thing you start to learn is that everybody's got something going on.
100%, yeah.
So like you build it up in your minds, like, you know, you've got all the problems in the world, but you just realize that everyone's going through something. It might be, you know, their own demons. It might be their own kind of grief that might be happening in their life. It might be other hardship. And so you realize that people aren't that bothered. And then once you realize that, you stop self-stigmatizing yourself. It's just like, let it go. Mm. Like, you are who you are. It is what it is. And I just also feel like, because I'm established in my industry and, you know, I have a fairly well-known reputation, then again, I wish there was someone like me at 20 that I could look up to and say, oh, yeah, that's how I want to be.
Mm.
Or, okay, you know, I wish when I was in hospital on occasions, I could have found someone like me talking on this type of conversation. You know, that's the impact of having these conversations in what you do, because, you know, you're bringing people's stories to life.
100%.
And it takes one story like this for someone to go, do you know what? It's all right.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful.
And, you know, just on that note, to the 20-year-old or to somebody who, you know, might be struggling or in denial, what would your key piece of advice be for them?
So, firstly, accept what's going on.
Yeah.
Accept that you have to take responsibility for yourself. Whatever diagnosis you've got or whatever situation you're in, like, you have to be accountable and responsible yourself to accept what's going on. So then you can start to manage what's going on for your future. So one great bit of advice my dad gave me, he pulled me aside in that first hospital experience. He was like, listen, son, whatever's going on right now, you got to deal with it.
Mm.
It's your responsibility. And it took me a long time to figure that out. But the sooner you can accept it, the better. The sooner you can seek out people that might be local to you, or you can leverage tools like LinkedIn and identify people that have maybe got your diagnosis and they're in the similar career route as you. So let's maybe say you want to be an artist, or you want to be in marketing, or you want to be a doctor. Like, go and find people that are doing what you're doing or want to do, but also have talked publicly about their issue or diagnosis. Because then you'll realize they've been through it and there's someone else that can guide you. Don't just like start withdrawing from your friendship group, your society, because you think you've now been labeled and you're different. It's fine. Everyone's different. That's a fact. You just simply now have a label that you might need to take medication for, you might need to manage. But believe me, the sooner you can get hold of it, the sooner you can start to live your life and manage.
I love that. And talking about getting hold of it, so I've had like a previous guest, and she's spoken about like being neurodivergent and how being neurodivergent has helped her in her creative role. Do you feel like your condition has helped you to be as successful as you are?
Yeah. You know, it's a double-edged sword for me. But ultimately, I know there are things that I'm able to do. There are ways of thinking that I have within me that makes me highly effective as a salesperson or as a business person or someone that manages multiple projects and can come up with ideas and, you know, think creatively. I'm not creative in the, you know, artistic sense or design sense.
Yeah.
I can't do anything with computers either. But what I am pretty handy at is like solving problems and thinking about big ideas and bringing big visions to life, and also infusing people with my ideas. And that definitely comes from, you know, experienced personality. But I also think, you know, the energy that I get from my diagnosis or condition means that I'm kind of effervescent and when I'm well, and that helps. And that gives me, I think, a bit of an edge. Mm. And actually, there's this book in the US called, that was released in the US many years ago, called The Hypermanic Edge. And it basically compares the traits of an entrepreneur to the traits of someone that's got the bipolar diagnosis, and they're actually identical.
Yeah.
Now, when it becomes a problem is when you can't function. And that's the issue. If you can't do your job or show up to work because you're not, you know, thinking straight, well, then that's not good. That's not positive.
100%.
So you've got to be able to recognize what you're good at, what your strengths are, lean into those, and also manage the things that might be a negative.
Okay. I feel like, there was a lot to unpack there, and we unpacked it, and I think it will help us as we like continue through your journey. So you started out as the SDR. You've mentioned the fact that you spent some years at LinkedIn. Do we have a gap to fill in, and kind of where were you after LinkedIn as well?
Yeah, so I actually and this is not on my LinkedIn profile, I did set up a company before LinkedIn, which was kind of my first ever, you know, registered business official. And it was consulting startups on how to grow their sales, because that's what my experience was. And it was very short-lived. I think I opened it and closed it within 6 months.
Okay.
And it was that led me to join LinkedIn. So because of that experience, I had to call around some friends. And I was like, look, I don't have a job. The business has not worked out. And a good friend of mine said, listen, we've got some roles at LinkedIn, and I joined LinkedIn, and you know, LinkedIn was a phenomenal business for many, many, many reasons. Great product, fantastic leadership, incredible culture, amazing people, and good financial upside, like everything you could want basically in a tech company. And I absolutely, you know, adore and am still very like proud of that experience. But while I was at LinkedIn, like, I'd been scratching this itch for a long time about, you know, I really want to pursue business. It has to happen. I think I was, you know, late 20s, about to turn 30. And I was like, I need to map out what's going to be, you know, the next thing for me and the big idea. And so at the time, I considered a number of things, and I knew that sales was a passion of mine, and sales was a skill that I developed and I could teach people. I also, because of the challenges with my mental health, I knew mindset was going to be at the heart of what I wanted to do. And then software as an industry is still booming, you know, will continue to do for many, many decades. And I drew this Venn diagram and all these circles crossed over. And that's when I came up with this idea of what is now known as sales confidence. Mm. And sales confidence, in essence, is a kind of networking and learning and development membership. And what we do is we help salespeople at each stage of their career with their mindset, well-being, and performance. And also what we encourage or inspire young people to realize is that you can become a 100K earner in sales.
Yeah.
And for me, being a 100K earner in this country puts you in the 1% of earners.
Yeah.
There is no faster way to do that than a sales career.
Mm. And I know, like, from speaking to you off camera, you've kind of said it, and you just said it there, anybody can earn 100K in sales. What do you feel is like the key criteria to help you achieve that goal and be successful?
Yeah, so, you know, firstly, you know, you've got to have a vision that you could go on to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you are hungry and motivated, and you are deeply curious, this is for me the trait that I think is critical. Are you deeply curious to understand yourself, understand a product, understand an industry, and you ask good questions, then that's going to get you at a point where you can start accelerating. You know, the sales skills themselves, prospecting, we talk about discovery, running successful meetings, mutual action plans, closing the deal, you know, those tactical stuff will be taught to you and you will learn those. But it's that mindset piece around your growth mindset, setting goals, stretch goals, putting in the work that we've already talked about in this conversation, believing that it's possible that you can achieve that type of earning quite quickly within a few years of being in the software industry, at least anyway. And so, you know, those are the areas that people need to focus on to give themselves a chance to achieve that earning. And then, like, once you start to get close to or you achieve that, you know, your world starts to change because you've got more disposable income. You're starting to save for maybe your first property. You're traveling to more exotic places. Maybe you want to help out your family. Maybe you want to give back to the community. You want to be more philanthropic. You want to invest, maybe. You want to angel invest. Like, you start to see like a different world of attainment, and then you can carve out that route for you. But yeah. I genuinely believe, at least in the software industry, that everyone has the potential in sales to go in and start earning that 100K.
So I'm listening to this. I'm a youngster. I want to earn 100K. What is my next step after listening to this episode?
Great. So the first thing I would do is I would go onto LinkedIn. Make sure you've got a LinkedIn profile. And I'd go through anyone that has your school listed on their profile. Or if you went to college or university, your university, then the next search term I would put in there is sales and software. And you will discover people that have been to your school and are in the software industry. Mm-hmm. And then I would reach out to them on LinkedIn and say, listen, I'm early in my career. I've seen that you're in software sales, working for this awesome technology company. I would love to learn how you've navigated that and how you got into it. And it might take you 10, 20, 100 goes before you break into that, but there's no excuse. I don't care if you're from Scunthorpe, Glasgow, Birmingham, whatever part of the UK, or even the world, in fact, you will find someone that's from a similar background to you in sales. And from there, you want to ask them to become your mentor.
Mm.
You want them to kind of guide, support, inspire you. And then you want to start showing up at networking events, industry events, where you can meet more like-minded people and start building relationships. And then if you can, you may not be able to afford it right now, but you should identify a coach, you know, a professional coach that can also help you set your goals, set structure in your approach to finding the role that you're looking for. All of this is kind of super focused. And then you need to upskill yourself.
Mm.
You know, information, like listening to this podcast or watching YouTube or even TikTok, there are people, like me even, that give away our expertise for free.
Yeah.
All the information is available. So you just need to start swatting up, and then you just need to break into a company. You know, you need to either apply to a recruitment company or get applying to jobs on job boards, or just identify companies and people on LinkedIn and directly reach out to them. Yeah. And the more that you do that, you will find yourself, before you know it, in a role where you're starting to carve out your career.
Yeah. And, you know, just going back to what you were saying before. So you were at LinkedIn, you needed to scratch the itch for anybody who's potentially looking to found their own thing. Like, what was kind of the tipping point where you were like, okay, I'm ready to leave this cushy, well-paid job and take all this risk and go alone?
Yeah, so at the time I had 3 kids, and I was a multi-six-figure earner, so I'd got to a point where I had a bit of savings. I was expecting a particularly big paycheck that was going to come in, and I was like, okay, well, I could probably survive 6 months now. But I'd also been promoting, talking about it, chatting to people about the idea behind the scenes,
yeah,
before I went full time. And this is what you need to do with your idea. You need to, before you throw in the job, you need to validate your idea. You need to test it with people, and not your mum and dad, your friends. Yeah. You know, one, they're either going to do two things. One, they're going to tell you it's a load of rubbish, which is not helpful. Or two, they're going to tell you it's great when it's not. So you're better off going out to strangers and saying, look, this is what I'm working on. What do you think? And if you start to get buy-in there, then you can start testing it. Then you can get a cheap landing page done. You know, you can buy a domain name for less than £10. You can get a website up for less than £10. You can create Instagram or a LinkedIn page or a TikTok channel for nothing. So you can do a lot before you need to take the plunge.
Mm.
And you need to then, you know, map out a plan of how you're going to manage your cash flow. Are you going to need to raise funding? Are you going to need to have a job for 6 or 12 months? You know, all these factors need to be taken into consideration. And at that point, you then should take the plunge. Ultimately, you've got nothing to lose.
100%.
You will find another job. I've learned that. I've been through hardships with sales confidence during COVID. In particular, I had to go and get a job to sustain myself at the time. So what? You know, you just got to do what you need to do. But eventually, you need to get into it full time and give it a real go.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I suppose to the listener who, you know, it's great that you've mentioned multiple times there that you've got 3 kids. If somebody has kids, they're thinking, how am I going to support them? Like you said, there's just no excuse. Do some things on the side. There are cheap resources at your disposal. Just make sure that you validate the idea before jumping off, especially when you have dependents.
Completely, yeah. Like, you definitely need to get some real validation that there is a market for what you are building or wanting to sell. You know, part of being an entrepreneur is there is a level of over-optimism and delusion, because you are coming up with an idea now that might not exist in the world or people don't believe is real. And so you have to lean into that, but you also need to get feedback and be realistic that this is something that's going to generate enough of an income for you, allow you to pay the bills, as well as then reinvesting your profits back into that business.
Yeah, this has been so great. You spoke about some of the hardships that you went through during COVID. To anybody who has experienced some setbacks, like, how is it you've overcome them? You mentioned, you know, going and getting a job. Mentally, like, did that put you back into a place where you could have potentially been put back into hospital? How is it that you kept mentally strong?
Well, this is it. So, you know, I went through a very, very depressive episode and chapter when COVID hit. And it was in part because my business was majorly disrupted because I was running events, and of course you couldn't run events during COVID.
Yeah.
And at the time I was very attached to sales confidence, my core business, and, you know, felt like it was never gonna pick up again and was never gonna happen. And if I'm honest, it's not easy. Like, you know, I can't honestly sit here and think, oh, you know, I know how to click back into gear after things have gone wrong. I don't always, and sometimes it takes me longer than I like. And there are periods of time where I've literally not wanted to get out of bed. And I find those scary because I'm such a go-getter. But when it hits me like it can hit anyone, I'm just like, James, you just need to get up and go. And I was like, no, I can't. I don't want to. I'm too scared. I don't want to face the world, right? I don't want to be seen. I don't want people to know what's going on or how difficult it is. And despite all that, what I would say, you know, what I've learned, actually, I think through business ownership, my illness, mental health hospitals, you know, some real dark depressions, losses over the years, is that there is always light at the end of the tunnel. And you've just got to go search for it. And sometimes it's so dark that you can't quite see that glimmer of light, but there is something. And you've just got to search the room.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to go looking around for it. You've got to try. You've got to pick yourself up. And eventually, once you see that glimmer, that little flicker, you've just got to turn it on, make it a bit brighter. And then before you know it, this is the crazy thing about my depression, I've come out of it. And I'm back again, and I'm rocking and rolling. So, you know, if you are listening to this and you're really not in a good place right now, I can assure you, you will get out of it. And I also guarantee that you will probably go through this difficulty again. You know, it is a bit of a cycle of life. It's just not everyone talks about it. You know, some of your friends will never say how bad it's got for them. Mm-hmm. Some of your family will never talk about how bad it's been for them.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee they've been through some dark times.
100%.
And so therefore, if you can tap into that acceptance that it's okay that you're going through a tough time, then you will be able to access that light and move forward.
I 100% agree. Going back to sales confidence, I feel like you spoke about the 100K earner, but you didn't necessarily say that, you know, you need to come to sales confidence and meet everybody. For the listener who might be like seasoned in sales, why would something like sales confidence be right for them to consider?
Yeah, so I mean, at that level, if you're you're a 10, 15, 20 year veteran in sales, the common challenge with sales and why it's a high income role is that it's extremely stressful. It's extremely difficult to execute on a sales growth plan. And you're dealing with a very driven board. Then you've got all your subordinates, you've got all your team members, you've got all your people that you employ under you. You're under a lot of stress. And sometimes you get stuck in a bubble and you just need to talk with a peer. And the best way to do that is around the table, maybe around some drinks, maybe around a dinner table. We've got a breakfast coming up in next week, in fact. And at that breakfast, you know, there will be 50 sales VPs, chief revenue officers, and they will get to mingle. And it's just sometimes it's a bit of a light relief. It's like, oh, wow, you're going through a tough time as well. It's like, yeah, I am. Or I've got this challenge right now. What do you think? And it's like this kind of magic happens when people relieve themselves of their problems with people that understand them.
Yeah.
Whereas if they have that conversation with their wife or partner, sometimes you don't get what you're going through. But when you find someone like-minded, similar experience, similar levels, that also is experiencing the hardship of what you're experience, you'll make progress.
Yeah, I love that. And I just had an episode that came out. He spoke about networking sideways. And, you know, sometimes even as a VP, maybe you're looking up to, you know, the CEO, the CFO. I think sometimes it's just really good to network on your level, because in that example that he was speaking about, you don't know, number one, you might be going through the same things, but even in future, when you're looking for potential new roles, I'm sure that the relationships that you make at these breakfasts and stuff, it can open doors in future.
Without a doubt, you know, the power of the network, especially from peer to peer, is super helpful, because you tend to find you get a lot more job offers when you're in work.
Yeah. All sods law. Right?
And then when you need it, there's no one knocking. So if you then go and speak to your peers that are at a similar level, you say, look, is anyone knocking on your door right now? And they go, yeah, these couple of companies are. Go check them out. Like, that's, you know, so much happens behind the scenes, you know, and finding a back door into a company via a relationship is the absolute way to go. Like, you know, if you're just job seeking right now and you're just clicking apply, you're just going to be at the bottom of the pile. But if you're picking up the phone or networking your way in, building relationships in that outside of that and inside that company, you get a referral, you get you know, suggestion to where you're going to work. It's a lot swifter. It's a lot easier.
You've obviously worked at LinkedIn. We've spoken about what people can do early in their career. For like the seasoned person who wants to become like more proficient on LinkedIn, what would your main piece of advice be?
So LinkedIn tips these days, number one, you know, you need a high quality professional photo. I still find it amusing when you see those photos of like you at a wedding where you've cut off your partner and you're like that, or you know, you've got a photo of you on the ski slopes, or for the younger people, they've still got a photo of them graduating, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever is professional, you have a professional pic in a studio like this and get something decent.
Mm.
Then, you know, your profile, especially if you're seasoned, should speak to the audience you're trying to serve. So it's not really about you unless you're job seeking. You're speaking to the audience that you need to serve. So if you're serving, you know, CFOs, you should be talking about how your product or services saves companies money, as an example. You then need a kind of strong level of engagement with people in your network. So everyone you meet, you should be connecting with. Then you should engage with their content. Like comments on other people's content is what improves engagement. And then you should also attempt to publish your own content. Now, this is where very few people actually do this. Apparently, and I don't know if this stats anyway the same, but when I worked at LinkedIn, we used to say that only 1% of LinkedIn people or profiles actually publish content.
Wow.
So therefore, again, if you want to stand out, you simply posting on LinkedIn about your experience, about your journey, about a meeting that you've had, about a place you're going to, about someone that you've just interacted with, will put you in that 1%. So just do it. Carve out the time. These days, you know, like talking about personal brand is overdone a lot. But I guarantee you, if you develop your brand, you will have more influence. You'll persuade more people. You'll be more liked. I get it literally every week. I had a call on Monday, and this is someone I want to speak at my event. He's like, James, you know, I've been connected to you for 4 years. I've never met you in person, but I feel like I know everything about you. And this is why, you know, doing things like this are important, because people get to know you, then they become familiar. So then when I pick up the phone to someone, they're like, yeah, hey, James.
I don't
have to warm them up, but they're already warm to me. That's the power of social media. You know, even my best mates that will never like or comment on my posts, they just, that's beyond them, you know, and beneath them. And they're not going to let them know they're seeing it. But they're like, again, a good friend of mine I went out with dinner last week, he's like, he goes, literally, you're the most prolific person in my feed. Like, every day I log in, I see something from you. And I'm like, well, that's the game, really. It's like having attention. Now, not everyone wants to be, you know, as kind of publicized as I am. But if you just do a little bit, the people that are in your circle of influence, your industry, will become more familiar with you, your company, your product. Guaranteed, that's going to help you make more business and more sales.
Mm.
So, yeah. So I guess in summary on LinkedIn, make sure you have a quality profile pic. Make sure you have a summary that serves the people you're targeting. Post on a regular basis, daily if possible. Comment on other people's content. Also just don't be held back by this idea in your mind that you don't know enough, or you don't have expertise, or you're not good enough. Yeah. Just drop that. Just get on with it.
100%. I love that. And even me, I'm trying to commit to posting daily, weekly, and it's hard. It's hard, but you just, like you said, you got to forget about it and just do it. But yeah, it was good to hear it direct from you. We've spoken about sales confidence and obviously some of the other things you're doing. I know, speaking to you, you've got a book coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about the book, who it's targeted at?
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. I'm genuinely a bit excited about it. I'm sure it will be available as people get to this part in the show and listening, I hope. the book is called How to Build Sales Confidence, and it basically is my philosophy, which is focused on three main pillars of mindset, well-being, and performance. And the gist of it is if you can better understand your mind and you can pursue your goals in a targeted, focused way, you will be more successful. But you've got to do it in a sustainable way. And that's what the well-being part covers. So, you know, I've talked a lot in this conversation with you about, you know, my ups and downs, my challenges, my ambitions, work ethic we've covered. It is not smart just to work all hours and burn out. There's nothing to be gained from that. Work hard, do more, but do it in a way that is sustainable. And that's what I try and cover in the book. So it's aimed at anyone who is interested in sales, starting out sales, is a sales veteran, as well as business owners, coaches, and people that want to earn more money. In fact, one of the things I'm... Oh, this is exclusive. I'm going to give it to you. The foreword has been written by who is now a very famous social media influencer, a guy called Simon Squibb.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Simon interviews people and asks them, what's your dream?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's built up millions of followers and he's become a good friend of mine. And, you know, he talks about once you find that dream, you need to then work out how you're going to make money from it.
Yeah.
You can't get away from that. And to do that, you need to make sales. Yeah. And so, you know, he describes the book as a key read and a key component of understanding how you make sales and become effective. And I think, you know, there's a lot of what I would call tactical sales books. Mine is less kind of tactical. There are a lot of tactics in it and there are a lot of tips, but it is more about the holistic perspective of how you show up as a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the type of thing that I think can help you guide your perspective on your thinking and challenge how you show up in a way that's more fruitful, more productive, more healthy, and more successful. So, yeah, that book, How to Build Sales Confidence, will be, you know, available on Amazon. And, yeah, I'm quite excited, actually. And just to say, though, I'll be honest, because, you know, I had some help putting it together. And I had some horrible imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I was writing it, I got to points and I would read back and I was like, who's going to be interested in this? And what I told myself, and even now, you know, because I'm excited, but I'm also slightly nervous about the outcome of people reading my book or paying to read my book. What I've realized is everyone's perspective's unique. And I believe that everyone will get a couple of nuggets out of it.
Mm.
You know, even if they read it and they're like, you know, wasn't what I was expecting or I thought there was more in there, I want them to at least say, yeah, but I did get that one thing from it. And if I can give someone, you know, that one idea or that one change in perspective or that one takeaway, then, you know, I think...
Job well done. I've got no doubt, you know, speaking to people at work about this conversation, like, they also see you're posting every day on LinkedIn, but some of them like know you and they're like, nah, we can learn a lot. Like, some people are going to some of the dinners that you've put on, and all the people in my sphere have got nothing but great words to say. So I've got no doubt that the book is going to be great, and I'm sure I'll also be reading. If it's out, we'll put a link in the description. And also, Simon, if you listen to this, invest in my podcast. I see you give a lot of people money and he's got like the letterbox where you can, so you can dream.
You need to go and ring his bell. You know, he's got that staircase.
Yeah, I've heard about the staircase. Yeah.
You know, the guy is, he's, do you know what? I've met tons of wealthy people because we talked about the importance of mentors. I have this list of my dream 20 entrepreneurs that I want to be like. There's 20 people on this list. Everyone from Gary Vee, Peter Jones from The Dragon's Den, Tony Robbins, and Russell Bronson, who's the founder of a company called ClickFunnels. There's all sorts of characters on. I've actually met about 10 of them.
Mm.
And I have to say, like, Simon Squibb, fair play to him. He is genuinely one of the most down-to-earth, passionate entrepreneurs I've ever met. To the point, and he mentions this in the foreword to my book, he actually took me on as he mentored me, but I paid him £10,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, 6 months into the arrangement, he calls me up one day and he's like, listen, James, I don't feel like I'm giving as much value as I should or would like to. And I'm not really set up to do this. I don't charge people. You know, I'm all about giving money away. So I'm going to give you your money back.
Wow.
And that literally, people don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, but he said, you're better off investing that in your business than in me. And I want you to continue to grow your business.
Wow.
You know, so that type of magic, that's such a good, how much of a good human he is. And, you know, the work he does to unlock people's potential, because this is what it's about. We're all on the hamster wheel. We're all in the rat race and we're just turning up and we're not thinking about our dreams as often as we could do. We're not pursuing our dreams even.
Mm.
We're not giving it energy. And, you know, he literally plucks people off the street and asks them what's their dream. And he helps some of these people turn those dreams into reality. And that's a gift, isn't it? What is more empowering than helping someone unlock that peace in their mind and just say, look, you can do it.
100%. And not to say I'm anything like Simon, but coming back to the reason for this podcast, it's just about unlocking people's minds to know that you can make 100K, because there are going to be people listening to this who didn't know that it was a viable option for them. And hopefully they've taken some nuggets away that they can implement immediately and it might set them on a new trajectory. So I understand what he's doing and I love it, because I'm trying to do something similar in a different way.
Yeah, but this is it. But this is why I think these conversations that you have are so important, because it's triggering and unlocking people's perspective. And because, you know, let's also be frank, there's a lot of people that are not exposed to some of the high performers that we are in our industry. Mm. You know, they don't know. You know, what I find crazy about London, the way it's built, is that you can have the richest people, you know, in one area, in one building with a park, and next door you've got the poorest. And that poor people have no idea what the rich people do or what they did to get there.
Mm.
And so one thing, even though I do have, you know, mixed perspective on social media and, you know, online platforms like YouTube and TikTok, etc., I think the most amazing thing about it is the transparency into the world of work.
100%.
And that you are basically giving people a view into the world of work and different careers and different approaches to careers. So yeah, no, I think it's fantastic.
No, we love it. It sounds like you do a lot. You obviously run multiple businesses. You have the book coming out. I always like to ask, do you have any productivity hacks?
Productivity hack, yeah. Number one productivity hack for me is time blocking.
Okay.
So if you look at my diary, everything is color-coded. So my travel here today, this session, meetings, dinners, events, gym, running, family time, I allocate every hour. Now, I have flexibility, like I allocate time for free time.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, but time blocking for me is the number one productivity hack. Also, what I would say is, like, I don't have notifications on my phone. That sounds like an obvious one these days, but or on Slack or on email, like, I don't let anyone interrupt me. I set the pace, I set the focus. I don't want any interruptions at any time.
Okay, they're sick. You mentioned the fact that, you know, you work a lot, but you don't want to just work all hours of the day. Would you say, number one, that you've got a good work-life balance?
I've always struggled with the word balance because I'm not a particularly balanced person.
Okay.
I live the life I want to live. And I talk about lifestyle design. I think it's about designing, you know, work, and it's interlinked with life. Like, I don't see that I have to balance one or the other, because I enjoy everything I do at the moment. And I show up each and every day focused on my purpose and my passion. And so I could be on my laptop for 6 hours on a Saturday. I don't see that as work necessarily.
Okay.
But I think I will say that as I've got older, you know, I've got three children, you know, I've got a new partner in my life. Like, those moments with like close family and in your relationships, they are the most important. Cliche, isn't it? But you know, work, projects, money, all comes and goes. And you know, your family's not, and friends and relationships are not going to be there forever, so make the most of it.
100%. I always like to ask that question because I do say, let's say you do work 6 hours on a Saturday, how do you then unwind?
Yeah, well, so I like to walk, I like to play tennis. I'm a very bad golfer, but I play that as well. You know, spending time with my kids, you know, I like to eat. So, you know, cooking and dinner is also like what I do typically to unwind. And I guess like anyone else, you know, the odd Netflix series is helpful as well.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, just to find a couple of questions before we get into the quick fire round. So my first one is resources. We've spoken about so much stuff today. Just thinking back to, you know, people who might want to be taking their first step in sales, what is their best resource?
So, you know, literally starting to follow people that are authors of sales books on LinkedIn, on YouTube, and TikTok. You know, feed the algorithm with where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So go and follow and identify and follow the authors, because they will then be connected to other authors, other influencers, other experts. And then also identify the people that are 2 to 3 years ahead of you to where you want to do, and go and connect with them. So if you're not, you're just starting out and you're not in sales, we'll just go and connect with a bunch of people that are in SDR. And start to ask them questions and get to know them, and you will get somewhere. And that is going to be an accelerated way for you to understand what is required to be successful.
I love that. And you've spoken about like TikTok and, you know, connecting with technology and I suppose the sales industry. Have you noticed any like emerging trends and things that people need to...
Yeah, I mean, look, generative AI, ChatGPT and the like, I think are obviously extremely powerful. There are so many ways that you can research, create, explore content via ChatGPT. And I think applying that into your workflows, into how you deliver, you know, post presentations, as long as you add your human perspective on it, like I think there's so much more to discover through that. Also, I mean, this is a sales related thing, but there are things like multi-dialers now, right? So rather than dialing one number at a time, it does 5, which is productivity.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can have 5 rings going on. The first one that picks up, that's the one you get through to.
That's sick. Multi-dialers. All right. I've learned that today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, you know, there's a few things, but I think there's a lot of scaremongering as well. Technology is advancing everything. It's changing everything. But I don't want to be in a situation where I never don't get the chance to sit down with another human. That's the end of humanity then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like, you know, whatever's happening with tech and the fun we can have with it and the productivity that we can create, like I still want the human interaction to be there.
And people buy from people at the end of the day. There's only so far that tech can take you.
Like people cringe at that, but it is the fact.
Yeah.
You want to do business with people you like, you trust, and yes, you need to do robust due diligence on the product or service that they're offering. You must do that. But ultimately, you're guided by an individual that's taking you on a journey. And the other reality is, when I think of what we call in the industry enterprise sales, so when you're navigating companies with like 1,000 or 10,000 plus employees, people are siloed in those companies. And it takes a networked salesperson to connect all the dots. The computer just can't do that. So yeah, those roles aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I love it. Where does James see himself in the next 5 and 10 years?
See myself?
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, from a humility perspective, at this point in time, I thought I was going to be much further than I dreamt of in my 20s. But on the other hand, I didn't expect some of the things that I've discovered. So, you know, I think for me, my family are in the kind of second, like they're all around kind of 10, 11 years old. So, you know, 5 to 10 years, they're going to be teenagers. And I'm looking forward to that adventure before eventually they leave. And I'll be then quite, still quite young. And I'm looking forward to doing a lot more like travel and adventures. And then I basically see myself as a serial entrepreneur. So I imagine that I'm going to have, you know, a number of companies, and I will invest in, you know, other founders to give them a chance to, you know, bring their product or service to the market. So
sick.
Yeah, that's where I kind of
not much. Just a few things.
Just a few areas that, you know, I'm excited about. You know, because it would put me in my 40s then. I do think, you know, when you're knocking on the, you know, you're in the second half of your life, right? When you're knocking on 50, touch wood, it's a long life. But, you know, I think it is only getting more exciting.
Yeah, I love that. James, this has been such a great conversation. We do like to do a bit of a quick fire. So let me actually get my phone for the questions. Sure. Money or happiness?
The first thing that comes to mind is money. And the reason is I do believe that money will contribute to happiness. I know when I've not had money how much stress and unhappy I've been, so I would say money.
Okay, very honest answer. Would you rather focus on acquiring new customers or retaining existing ones for long-term growth?
The smart answer is customers for long-term growth, but my obvious answer is I love new. Like new relationships, new deals, net new, that's kind of where I focus.
Love that. Would you rather travel to the past or to the future?
The future.
Okay, nice. Favorite book?
Favorite book, probably How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
Is an absolute classic and like still something to this day that I reference.
Okay, love that. What is your biggest asset?
I like to, I'm gonna answer this twice. I like to think that I'm perceived and very likable.
Yeah.
Right, and I think I've worked on that. And the other thing is, like, I'm a super connector. I know how to connect people, I know how to connect the dots, I know how to connect ideas. I'm very effective at connecting things together, so yeah. I think that would be like my main asset.
That's a great superpower to have. Would you rather lead a business with rapid growth but uncertain sustainability, or steady incremental growth with predictable outcomes?
I would. The ego is like rapid growth, but I like steady and predictable.
Okay, love that. Would you rather have a shorter sales cycle with lower value transactions or longer sales cycle with higher value transactions?
I prefer short.
Okay. Are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment?
Well, this one.
Yeah.
And then what would I say is another... I do like Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, he has some huge names on there, and they're the ones I tend to get like the shorts of, so I'd say Joe Rogan.
Okay, love that. And my final question I always ask people: who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
And I'm actually going to ask a bonus question. If you could go into business with any one person in the world, who would it be?
First person that comes to mind, I do talk him up a lot, is Peter Jones from the Dragon's Den.
Okay.
So he actually went to my school.
Oh, did he?
In Windsor for a few years. And I've actually spent time with him. I've had lunch with him. And, you know, he is incredibly driven, obviously successful, very creative, but also he's super humble. Mm. Like, he still lives in the local town that he grew up in, Marlow, and... you know, he's still one of the boys, and I've met some of his, you know, mates. And I just think, you know, if I had that guy by my side, that I could go and achieve whatever I wanted to achieve. So yeah, Peter Jones would be my answer.
I love that. Peter, if you want to come on, you know, definitely. We're here. Yeah. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
I think... I'd probably say to myself, take your time. You know, it definitely doesn't happen as fast as you want it to, expect it to, believe it should. With all the visualization, manifestation, it still doesn't happen as quickly as you want it to. So honestly, just take your time off, take the pressure off. you'll get to where you want to go, or, you know, where you're going to end up. So once you're there, just appreciate it, because you're often a lot further ahead than you really think you can realise you are.
100%. 100%. I love that. And I know you'd still be doing the same thing, because you've dreamt about being in sales all your life.
Well, this is it.
James, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much. Where can people find you?
So, you know, if you search James Ski Sales Confidence on Google, I'll come up on all channels. I guess my main channel is LinkedIn. You can find me on TikTok and YouTube. I'm trying to crack those channels. If you want to help me out, get over to those two channels and make a subscribe.
Yeah, dude, look, two for the price of one. Like and subscribe to me. Like and subscribe to James.
Help us out.
Yeah. James, this is, like I said, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And to the listener, if you've made it to this point, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, share, comment. Let us know who else you want to hear from. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.